You're talking so sweet, well, you needn't. You say you won't cheat, well, you needn't. You're tapping your feet, well, you needn't. It's over now, it's over now.
And good afternoon, Richmond. You are listening to The Defenders Live, and I am your host, Anna Edwards, and today is Monday. And today, my guest is Ray Boone. You are the senior editor, the founding editor of the Richmond Free Press newspaper. And I am really delighted to welcome you to the show on those grounds alone, but also because literally on your grounds is the Richmond occupation movement.
That's absolutely correct. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And let me just thank you for inviting me to be a guest on your community spirit show, and also congratulate you for your activism in the community for liberation in a city that is still riveted to a Confederate mentality.
I appreciate that. It's one of those things where, even along with what we have all considered a victory to a certain extent around the burial ground, it also reminds us how much work we still have to do.
Well, one of the problems that we too often have is we shout and celebrate before we really achieve the victory.
There.
And we should be aware of that. We still have a long, long way to go. And I think what is happening now shows that in terms of constitutional principles and respect for constitutional principles.
So your invitation to the evicted occupation movement, they were on Halloween, the night of Halloween, evicted from the Kanawha Plaza in downtown Richmond. Your invitation to them to now occupy your property, which happens to be adjacent to Mayor Jones' property, is really an issue of constitutional rights and free speech.
There's no question about that. I think we should be more precise in terms of what the government did. They bulldozed the protesters who were operating within the framework of constitutional principles, specifically the First Amendment. The First Amendment, which really is the People's Amendment, we have been driven to believe that it's only an amendment for the press, but it is an amendment for the people because it gives the people freedom of redress of grievances. It gives the people freedom for peaceful assembly. It gives the people freedom, of course, for speech, and it gives the people freedom for religion. So if you look at it, it is a people's amendment. And the shameful thing that is happening in Richmond is that the government is ignoring this constitutional principle and these rights unashamedly.
Why do you think that is? To a certain extent, all criticisms included, there has been a sense, I think, by and large, especially compared to the previous administration, that Mayor Jones has actually been a fairly responsive mayor. Why do you think that in this dynamic, his administration would capitulate in this way?
Well, I think we need to go back historically. During the period of the civil rights movement, and I was a part of this, there was a feeling that if we gained the vote, we would gain liberation. We were off course. You cannot gain freedom without economic power. And what this means is that the people with the money, especially when we accept the definition that is given us in terms of what power is. We have been brainwashed to believe that power is restricted to money. Politicians believe that too. Now, I would say the reason that it's somewhat perplexing to me that the mayor would take the position that he is taking in view of two things. Number one, when you look at his background in the ministry, and of course, the gospel favors the poor, and also when you look at the commitments that he has made to the people rather than the forces against the people. I cannot figure this out myself because it doesn't make sense. The other problem that I'm surprised that the mayor has not freed himself of, he is taking the blame for the problem of poverty. He's taken the blame for many of the ills of the city of Richmond. Now, he has served, without question, the corporate community to a great extent. So, since he has such a great relationship with them, what he should do is say, fellas, let's team up and solve the problem of poverty, solve the problems of injustices in the city to which you have contributed much. And he has the power to do that when you consider the amount of money that the city spends with corporations like Verizon. One of the most irresponsible corporations in the city. If he were to sit down and say, listen, I need your help. I have served you well. What is the measurement? The stream of money is still going in the same direction. So there should be a return, and the mayor should use that power. Take, for instance, when businesses come into the city, he should make it a top priority for them, or a requirement, that they perform in a responsible, fair-minded way and correct injustices. Of course, that takes leadership. That takes a commitment to doing the right thing, to put it very basic. Mm-hmm. With that understanding of the power that he has and what he could do with that power, it would change things to a great degree.
I know in conversations in the past about how it would be that maybe the city could work with the corporate system here, that, you know, that is one of our major job provider entities. Is the corresponding relationship between, say, our corporations and our schools and workforce development for the industries that we actually have here? With Virginia Commonwealth University, for example, I think having in its student body the last number I recall is from a few years ago that they had, I think in a freshman class, only somewhere around 40 of that new class coming in were actually students from the city of Richmond or from the Richmond region. So that sounds like an interesting kind of disconnect between our local power structures and the very people who could be employed by them, who could take advantage of that and thereby improve their own situation.
Well, I think you're absolutely correct, but yeah. Let's look at a model. And it's consistent with what I said earlier. Maynard Jackson in Atlanta, he understood clearly the importance of economic power, and he understood how the long history of how black people or black businesses had been neglected. For instance, corporate wanted an airport in Atlanta. He said, I do too, but we cannot have it unless black people have a piece of the economic pie. And so, the history shows that that works if you tell them and you are sincere about it, that it is to the benefit of everybody if there is a redistribution of wealth. And that is absolutely what is needed when you look at 1% of the population controlling everything across the board. And that includes, of course, the businesses and jobs. That includes the government and even the press, which serves the corporate community.
It even includes philanthropy.
And philanthropy, well, philanthropy is one way to keep people from rebelling. And so my position is that we should expunge the need for philanthropy. If we had people who were self-reliant and there were a more equitable distribution of wealth, in the newspaper industry here, the free press, newspapers are mirrors and of a community. And you can so easily see the discrimination against the Richmond Free Press. If you look at the tons of ads that are in the daily newspaper, a publication that has not lifted this community but has retarded it, versus the Free Press, which is a progressive newspaper, but we cannot get the business, although we can print at the same level. We come off the same presses as the New York Times and USA Today. So they can't say we can't print. They can't say that we can't spell. We have greater readership in the majority community than the Times Dispatch. But embedded, deeply entrenched racism continues to devalue black people and not respect the power of the dollar, black dollar, which determines whether a company, in many instances, is profitable or not. One of the problems that we have is that we do not recognize our power. We have restricted power to money. Now, I have come up with what I call the tripod of power, and whenever you control two of the three legs of that tripod, you have power. And that means that the people who are in the poverty category have power, but they have been brainwashed to believe that they don't. The three legs would be money, of course. The other would be numbers, or the votes, or buying power. The third would be cerebral endowment, or brain power. Now, let's say that 1% has control of the money, but we have control of the numbers or the votes and the buying power. and we use our brains to use those numbers in the category of business and at the polls, then we can emerge on top and can bring about justice. So we've got to change our mindset and understand that we have power and that we're going to use the power. Once you let those in power know that you know what they know, then we will be able to emerge in a better condition.
I'm going to take just a second to let people know that they're listening to The Defenders Live here on WRIR. It's 97.3, Richmond's independent radio, Richmond's radio for the rest of us. And my guest today is Ray Boone. He is editor and founder of the Richmond Free Press newspaper. And we are talking about several things, one of which, of course, is the occupation. But also we're talking about the constitutionality of the dynamics of Richmond's occupation, but also, in essence, how this is manifesting itself, I think, in the black community at large, in the country at large, but also literally how it's manifesting itself here in Richmond. And I think that's sort of where I wanted to go next.
Okay, I think you should, because what is happening here signals or gives evidence of a police state. And I'm not dealing in hyperbole. Notice that after the mayor met with the what I call my special guest, he bulldozed the location Kanawha Plaza
in the
wee hours of the morning, and certainly that was not an acceptable maneuver on the part of the government. The other part of it is that the government has gone into the communities, or gone into Brookbury, my community, and the police chief has called a press conference for the community and selected people that he wanted to speak in opposition to these young patriots who are law-abiding, peaceful citizens with great idealism, who believe in the high ideals of America. I have personally called the police chief about this on one occasion I called him, and of course he did not return the call. On another occasion I called him when one of the neighbors, thinking, I'm sure, that the mayor and the police department would be on his side, resorted to trying to run down one or two of the peaceful protesters. Now, this is evidence of a police state wherein respect for citizens goes down the drain and the government is quiet. Now, this is ironic since the mayor, in his slogan or his administration, places high emphasis on three C's, and one of those C's is communications. And also, I called the mayor's office about this potential violence that was about to occur, and I think it was created by the zoning citation that was inappropriately issued to me. It's somewhat of a joke the way they did it. They gave, although it was the citation was addressed to me, they gave it to my special guest, My special guest called me at my office and told me that they had received it and read the essence of it. And then about an hour or so later, a city representative comes up and gives me this counterproductive, contradictory, misleading, zoning citation. It gives a sense, listen to this, it gives a sense of urgency that I had committed some great violation, but then they give me 30 days to appeal. Now, does that make sense? That's typical of the leadership at City Hall.
Yeah.
It's non-responsive. As a matter of fact, I go back to covering City Hall and government back to the days of segregation. Now, the segregationist leadership, they would tell you straight out where they stood, but they were responsive to you, and they would acknowledge a letter. They would, if you called them, they would call right back. But this administration is, when it comes to communications, which the mayor emphasizes, it's just delinquent.
Well,
and
you know,
unacceptable.
And one of the things that's sort of percolating up in terms of various things that you've said today, I'm starting to really build up this, what exactly are they afraid of? Because a police state usually can build itself when the general community is in a state of fear. And of course, we know that people are frightened about the economic picture.
Sure.
And that causes people to sort of hunker down into dogma and into, into positions that cause them actually, as you say, to remain quiet in the face of injustice or in things that they are just not sure they understand.
Well, I think, speaking of understanding, I think the government officials need to review the First Amendment.
I would bet they're taking certain things
for
granted.
Or whether they've read it at all. The other part of it is that they need to recognize that really the First Amendment serves as a safety valve. In other words, it gives the people the opportunity to vent their frustrations, to speak out about how they feel. Now, what does that do? That serves to curb violence. But it seems that our leadership doesn't understand that the First Amendment is also on their side. Curb and balance, giving people the right to the opportunity to exercise their constitutional rights.
Yeah.
And so this is rather pathetic and shameful. The other part of it is that we need to understand that just because you have black visibility in government doesn't mean you have black representation or black power. And I guess the best example, the most outstanding example would be Clarence Thomas, but I'm here to tell you that we've got a lot of little Clarence Thomases running around Richmond. And not only them, but you have white officials who were elected with black votes. And rather than being sensitive and accountable to the electorate, they are accountable to business, big business. And this is a bad situation that's going to get worse because of the Supreme Court decision that has given corporations personhood. And that is terribly ridiculous. Greed can never be satisfied. And what we also need to understand is that when you are silent on injustices, that is an injustice within itself.
Sure.
So when you know there's an injustice, when you can so easily see it in the black community, wherein black-owned businesses are boycotted by the government. In the city of Richmond, which is majority black, you have a shameful 7% procurement record of black businesses only receiving 7%. Then when you go to the state level, out of every dollar, every procurement dollar that is spent, black businesses get less than 2 cents. This is outrageous. And as I said before, if we had directed that money in a proper and fair-minded way, there would be more black businesses. You would have less of an unemployment problem. And even it would help the businesses, the corporations to a large degree, because you would be creating people with buying power. In addition to that, people who have businesses and in the black community would feel as if they have a piece of the rock, so to speak.
Yeah.
But now what is happening in a city that had once had the reputation of being the Wall Street of America, the Black Wall Street, now most of those businesses are gone. We had the historic Consolidated Bank. It is no longer. And when you look at the sacrifice that was made to create Consolidated, and Consolidated is symbolic of what is happening to black businesses across the board.
Yeah, I think there is a great deal for our mayor to consider. The expectations are different, and I think more pointed. And I think he's laid that out himself, and I think this community has long deserved it.
We agree.
Well, Ray, I would like to thank you very much for joining us today on Defenders Live, and I very much look forward to what is to come in the weeks to come around this occupation and how your paper tells the story.
Well, we are optimists. We have seen other situations like this, and in most cases, there have to be many sacrifices, but generally speaking, right prevails.
It does.
And so history is on our side. The Constitution is on our side. And when you look at the beautiful weather we had on Thanksgiving Day, that tells you something. The greatest one is on our side.
There you go. Well, thank you again for being with me today.
It's been a joy.
You're talking so sweet, well, you needn't. You say you won't cheat, well, you needn't. You're tapping your feet, well, you needn't. It's over now, it's over now.